Hey guys, it's podcast time here at CycloneFanatic.com. Of course, on the iTunes feed as well, or wherever you get your podcasts. The season just around the corner. The fall season will kick off up at Iowa State. And it's become a bit of a tradition here at Cyclone Fanatic for me to go in and sit at the desk of Jamie Pollard and do an off-the-record podcast. This year's off-the-record podcast throughout the offseason have been brought to you by our good friends at the Iowa Clinic Men's Center. If you go to iowaclinic.com/center/men's center, you see a picture of a guy reading a book to his little girl. And that's what it's all about. I have a little girl myself. She's 2.5 right now, and she is the single most important thing in my life, person in my life, and I love her with all my heart. And that's why you need to go. Some of you guys have one of those, a little boy, maybe multiple kids. Even if you don't, maybe you have a wife, a girlfriend, anything. That's why you go and get your physical, guys. It's not for you. It's because you need to be there for those important moments. You have people who depend on you. And you need to be responsible. Go get that physical. It's so easy. Give them a call at 515-875-9801. Be a man. Go to the doctor. Or just do this. Go to the website and click on the request an appointment link. Boom. All sorts of different locations for the Iowa Clinic Men's Center. Personally, I go to the one in Ankeny. Super easy for me. Iowa Clinic locations in Altoona. Of course, Ankeny, Johnston, Waukee, got the Methodist Medical Center, and then also the Iowa Clinic West Des Moines campus. That's the big daddy. Iowa Clinic Men's Center. Be a man. Go to the doctor. Jamie Pollard, our preview for the 2017 Iowa State fall sports season starts right now here at CycloneFanatic.com. All right. Well, welcome Jamie Pollard to the podcast. Jamie, how many years in a row have we done this?
You start to lose count when you get to a certain age.
We're getting old.
Yeah, you know, you aren't this young whippersnapper student that's just trying to break into the business any longer. You've done it.
Well, I put on the pounds as well.
Well, I didn't notice that, but
no, it's good to be here. I look forward to this every year because it seems like we do this about a week before the season, and I know that the listeners absolutely do too, because you get to this time of year, you know, and everybody's just so excited. They're just ready to get going.
Optimism is a great thing, isn't it?
Isn't it?
It's awesome.
You seem optimistic.
I've
heard you on other mediums, and you seem like you're ready to go for this football season at least.
Well, number one, I love this time of the year because it's a great time where everybody is so optimistic and so it's re-energizing to kind of kick off the year. But I think that there's a little more substance to the optimism this year. You know, I'm not ready to anoint us. We need to prove it on the field. But things just feel different and look different and sound different, and that's exciting.
Yeah, no, for sure. How – before we get to football and everything coming up, it seemed like a really calm off season to me.
That's good. Calm is good.
You know what I mean, though? Because there's been coaching changes of different varieties.
We're not talking about the Big 12 imploding.
No, that's the thing. It just seemed very calm down in Dallas.
Uh-huh.
Compared to like a year ago when I got on the plane and like then I saw the Big 12's going to look into expand. Like there was none of that. Was it calmer for you, or is this just a perception thing from the outside?
No, I think that's a pretty good observation on your part. For better or for worse, the Big 12 has continually been, you know, a subject of discussion for the last umpteen years.
Yeah.
And this year seems to be a lot quieter. And that's good because I think it reflects reality versus just, you know, hyperality, if that's a word.
Yeah, no, I get it. Do you think that I know that there's been some substance to it. I mean, because last year you guys announced you're going to look into expansion and whatnot, and that has to be reported on. But it's like the fact that just the media climate is the way it is the reason a lot of that has been portrayed the way it has over the last 5-10 years?
I think that's a big part of it. I mean, not much happens in this world anymore that doesn't just get totally exploited and, you know, overanalyzed and reanalyzed.
Yeah.
And there's so many platforms now for people to articulate their beliefs or their opinions. And so things tend to just be on the extremes, right?
Correct.
So, but at the same time, there was, you know, there was smoke in those prior years.
2010.
And, yeah. And, you know, and so put those two together and you get a pretty bad situation. What's nice just as an administrator and that has to deal with this is, yeah, the waters have been a lot calmer, as they should be, because, you know, it's never as good or as bad as it appears.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of nice because it's still never as good or as bad as it appears, but it doesn't appear to be such a big topic, you know? And so it's nice not to be talking about that, although that's what we're doing right now.
Yeah. Well, I had good intentions because it did. It seemed like a calm off season. Let's look ahead.
But Chris, it all revolves around one thing in terms of how it gets reported, not the substance of it, but you know, what happens? Do we get a team in or do we not get a team in the playoff? And, you know, the playoff piece triggers way too much discussion about a lot of other things. I mean, it's worthy talking about whether a team should be in or not. But in our case, when people overanalyze, well, why didn't the Big 12 get in? You know, we're the one that looks radically different or has looked radically different. And so then we become an easy target and everyone then wants to surmise that that's the reason why. And so you better do this, do that, do that. Mark my words, you know, if we are in a position to have a team in and we blow it because that team loses the inaugural Big 12 championship, I mean, you can write that script for the Paul Feinbaums of the world, can't you? Right?
Absolutely.
You know, and so
absolutely. Which crazy to me though, Jamie, because it's like that could happen to any other league
team. Oh gosh, yes.
It just hasn't yet.
It has not.
It will at some point.
It will, and you know, that was my take on, you know, whether we should have it or we don't. I mean, quite honestly, really didn't matter to me. If we're in that spot, I don't care if we have to play a championship game or we don't get, we'd just be happy to be in that spot.
Yeah.
But those that, you know, historically have been in that spot felt like we should have the championship game. And so, you know, I agree and vote with it. But I was the one sitting back going, okay, so the law of history and odds would say that the underdog is going to upset the favorite.
At some point.
At some point in time. And probably more often than not, that'll happen in a year. So it hasn't happened in the first 2 years of the playoffs. And so my concern is that what's going to happen – or the first 3 years of the playoffs, I should say. So my concern is now that we're going to be in a championship game, we just put ourselves in a position to be part of the odds.
Absolutely.
Where we were guaranteed not to have that happen when you didn't have a game.
That in this league has such a history of that upset in the championship game.
Yep. But here's the biggest difference, which is probably a great asset for us, but it won't be until people really start talking about it, is – we are guaranteeing that our championship game is our two best teams.
This is true.
One versus two. So the odds of two beating one are going to be more likely in our league because we've seen it now. Hell, the Big Ten last year didn't even have their top two teams in the championship game. You know, you know, they had their third and fourth teams. You know, if based on what the national media and the college football playoff had decided, I'd argue Penn State was probably the best team in the Big Ten last year, but they weren't in the polls.
Correct.
So,
how
ironic is that?
Well, and I mean, let's all be honest, there's bias and especially, you know, you go by what you are familiar with, and Penn State hadn't been good for a really long time. So it took them a while to earn that credibility. Here's what drives me nuts as a guy who every day puts on my quote-unquote analyst hat and tries to figure this out during the season. It's very difficult to analyze this sport in particular when you're trying to narrow it down to four teams because there's so many different playing fields.
Yes.
I mean, I'd love to see a day, and I don't know how this happens or when this happens, but in college football where everybody's playing nine conference games, I would love to see a day where, you know, where we're in smaller leagues or if those – bigger leagues go into, I don't even know how it works, but like when you have the SEC playing FCS teams in November, I mean, it all gets very scattered for me when it comes down to playoff time.
Yeah, you know, I mean, one, I think it's good that it's not, I mean, it is so healthy for the sport that it's not academic in what the Final Four teams are, in a way that it keeps the interest of the sport throughout the season. That being said, you know, I think, you know, college football has been played for decades, right? Yet we are overanalyzing a sample size of 3 years. And, you know, when That's conferences true. Realigned and bigger seem to be the flavor of the day.
Yeah.
Well, you know, time will tell. And we said that at the time. You know, we were, you got to play the cards you're dealt. So it sounded disingenuous for us to say, well, the 10-team model is the best model. We thought it was, but time will tell whether it is or it's not. You know, I think we got a little insight last year into maybe bigger isn't what it's all cracked up to be, you know, because I look at the Big Ten and go, how many years can they have happen what happened last year before people don't want to go and pay $400 to go to the Big Ten championship football game when the winner of the game isn't the champion of your league according to the college football playoff, you know? And so that was a new data point, and people are still kind of processing that. If that happens again this year, I don't think, you know, the Wisconsin fans or the Penn State fans are going to be running to pay $300 to go to Indianapolis to go watch their team basically play a game that's meaningless.
Yeah.
And so
it's a good point. Yeah.
Time will tell.
Was the Big 12 championship game, I've argued that it seemed to me like there was more incentive with that whole round of looking into realignment and what eventually added in when he added the title game. That seemed more like that 13th data point.
Totally. The only reason we added the championship game is for the 13th data point.
So we could shoot down that was a financial decision.
No. I mean, is there a financial benefit to it? Yes, but it's it was totally about the 13th data point. And, you know, and the irony of it is, as we're doing that based on 2 years of data, the CFP makes a decision that the 13th data point didn't matter to get Ohio State into the playoff last year. So, you know, we're all learning.
Yeah.
And time will tell what's the best model and you know, whether the model should be smaller leagues or not. Who knows? You know, but I guess that's what makes it all interesting.
I just I long for a day, and not really here, because I feel like we kind of have it here with the 10-team league, and it's still pretty regional. I mean, that West Virginia, of course, isn't. But I just long for the days where you could – where, like, if I'm an Iowa fan, for instance, like, the road trips are difficult.
Right.
Think about Missouri, right?
Right.
Like, where – I mean, Missouri can drive to Arkansas.
Right.
And I have a lot of friends who are down there in the journalism world, and they're like, nobody drive – no, there's never any opposition fans here. And I just feel like we're heading to a direction where – because we're in a little bubble here, I feel like, at Iowa State, because you just tweeted out a week ago about potential season ticket records and whatnot.
Yep.
So, like, people are still supporting it here, and they're still coming. But nationwide, you know, attendance is – it's getting harder and harder to get people at the games. And I just feel like, you know, when you've got Rutgers, who's completely isolated from the rest of its league, and even West Virginia may have this problem as well, I just feel like 10 years from now, maybe we need more – regional type stuff.
Well, you know, and then that's, you know, time will tell that. You know, you're right, we have been a little insulated, but, you know, I've said all along, I mean, it's not like we have something, you know, we don't have a secret sauce here that immunes us from what's happening on a national level. I think what happens here maybe happens just at a little slower implementation. And so I've described it as the wave, you know, and the wave around the country has been, you know, you're seeing erosion in fan bases. And there's a lot of reasons for that. And our erosion maybe just didn't start. But, you know, we've seen it some this year in the sense that, you know, we're up in every category, and we were up early in every category, except students have been extremely slow to purchase tickets. And whether they go through their entire allotment or not is – you know, we won't know them probably till the Iowa game. But what we do know is in previous years, they would have already been through their allotment.
Why is that, do you think?
You know, ultimately, we don't know. you know, we've got several theories, but I think we need more data to tell. I mean, one is this year, the first game isn't until 2 weeks after school started. So, you know, we're selling, you know, we sold 180 student tickets yesterday. We've been selling over 100 a day. So we're getting there.
Yeah.
You know, we're probably within 1,000 of them being sold out right now of students. And if they do that, we'll be over 40,000. But is it because of that? Is it because last year, you know, we had two games where the students weren't, the school was closed. They weren't even here. So did those students kind of feel like it wasn't worth it because they weren't here for the game, so they didn't jump to buy them this year? You know, the first 4,000 tickets we sell are the all sports package, which includes basketball. Well, you know, we've had a great run in basketball, and, you know, the expectations for this year probably aren't what they've been in the past. So is that part of it? I mean, ultimately, we still are trying to figure that out. I'm hopeful that, you know, certainly by the Iowa game, because there's always been students that want to buy tickets for, you know, after the first game because it's Labor Day weekend. But by, you know, next Saturday and then the following Saturday, that they'll have bought up all the student tickets. But it's just, we've had to work harder.
So are we looking at a season ticket record possibly?
No, we won't get the record because the record was 2013 of 43,000. But this would be like, I think, the third time we would go over 40,000.
Okay.
Which, you know, that's a big number. And, you know, I think back to when I first started 12 years ago, you know, we couldn't get 25,000 people to come to the game, period, let alone have 40,000 season ticket holders.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty confident at this point that we're going to get over 40,000. But, you know, we need the students just to keep buying 100 tickets a day for the, you know, through next weekend.
I feel like, too, just a little bit, Iowa State is playing with some advantages, though, and just in the sense that the enrollment's so much higher now.
Yep.
And I'm not even talking about students. I'm more talking about alumni.
Yep.
Who is living in the state. It just, you probably have more data than I do on that, but it seems like compared to 15 years ago, there's some organic growth that should help as
huge.
Well.
Huge. I mean, huge. I mean, one, again, there was 22,000 students when I started. You know, we're now 36 or 37,000 students.
Wow, that big of a growth.
Yeah. So wow. It's been amazing on that front. You're right that with that number of more students, that's more alums that you're putting into the marketplace every year. And more of those students more of those alums are choosing to stay in the state of Iowa. So, you know, not only are we the largest institution, but we surpass them in terms of most alums living in the state. And we are, our production is putting more into the pipeline, but we are also the number one in 77 of the 99 counties for high school graduates choosing to go to either Iowa or Iowa State. And so we're putting more into the pipeline on the front end. We're educating more throughout the process, and then we're putting more into the alum pipeline, which that has a cumulative effect too.
I still think too, I've told you this before in private and publicly, but I think that your tailgate tour that you guys started, when did you start that? What, do you know what the first year
11
was?
Years ago.
That to me is the most organic way that I think I've ever seen anybody in this business grow it, because I mean, I can attest to it. My all-time favorite NASCAR driver was horrible. He never won races at all. But you know why he was my driver? Because my dad and I were sitting in a pool at Indianapolis one year, and the guy who drove this guy's show car around gave me a free T-shirt, you know? And
right.
I became that. I sat there and watched that guy lose for 10 years. I think he won like two races the entire time, but he was my guy because I got that free T-shirt. And it's just like if 5 years ago Fred Hoiberg goes up and gets a picture with the kid, or
yep.
Paul Roy, it's huge.
Well, we had a young man this year over in the Quad Cities that when I was talking to people before the event started, he was there with his parents, and I just said, you know, so how many years have you been coming? And he goes, I've come every year since you started. And I said, really? I said, so where are you now? And he goes, I'm a sophomore at Iowa State. I said, so like you were like a 7-year-old, 8-year-old? And he goes, oh, yeah, I was sitting at the table with my mom. I said, do you remember what gift we gave you? And he goes, yeah, it was a Cyclone hat. You know,
you
and
go.
So I introduced him and brought him up on the stage.
That's awesome.
But there's a great example of, you know, we kind of grew our own.
Yeah. Well, and I think back to my childhood, too, in Southwest Iowa. Iowa State was really not on the map.
Uh-huh.
Nebraska was the biggest brand.
Yep.
And it really wasn't close. I mean, I bet 50% of the people in my town were Nebraska fans, probably 40, 35% were Iowa, and then some farmers,
right,
you know, some leftovers were Iowa State. And the, like, if we would have had something like that when I grew up,
well,
I think that could have been different.
I remember telling this kind of analogy to folks. You know, sometimes when you're living in the in a historical change, you don't realize it. You know, and I, you mentioned Nebraska, and I used to say that. I said that, you know, there was a period of time when Nebraskans only knew what they knew in the moment, which was sellouts and Tom Osborne and really good football. But I said somebody was a fan before Bob Devaney when they weren't very good. Right. And so I used that analogy this year when I talked to the football team. Coach Campbell's using this rock analogy that, you know, you to get a rock to roll downhill, you got to get it moving first. And then once it gets going, you know, the momentum starts going. And as I was getting ready to talk to the football team, I was just come back from vacation in the Grand Canyon. And so I'd become a history buff on the Grand Canyon. So I told the football team that, you know, this is dinosaur years. But, you know, there was a time. I mean, the Grand Canyon, I asked him how many kids had seen the Grand Canyon. A few people had raised their hand. Matt Leo just came from there.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Said, as awesome as the Grand Canyon is, there actually was a time that the Grand Canyon wasn't there. And that's really hard to fathom when you go look at the
sure
Grand
is.
Canyon and go, it wasn't here? Okay? And so my message to him was things aren't always how they appear today forever. And so I picked on my Wisconsin kids. I think we got 5 on the football team. And I said, who in here is a Green Bay Packer fan? And, you know, they all raised their hand. And I said, yeah, you guys in your age bracket only know Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. You know, I remember Lynn Dickey, David Whitehorst, Scott Campbell. I mean, Packers were horrible. But when I was their age, they were horrible. But these guys only know them as, you know, they win the NFC Central every year. And so I used that and I said, you know, so don't think that the Cyclones always have to be the Cyclones of old. They can be the Cyclones of new.
Is that, so you said when we started the interview, let's get the football here. You said that things just kind of feel a little bit different. I think you said a little more substance is what you thought. What, give me an example. What are you seeing that makes you feel that way?
Well, first and foremost, I've talked about this and I hope people can fully understand this. You know, our football team academically is done, had a monumental sea shift. They've gotten the big boulder to start moving. And they've had their best grade point averages in the history of Iowa State.
Wow, that's awesome.
But we're talking taking the team from like 2-4 to almost 3-0.
Wow.
Okay, so monumental change. But what's significant about that isn't that Coach Campbell came in, he's got 125 new kids, and they're all rocket scientists. You know, there's 5 classes essentially in a football team, and he's only changed 2 of them, right?
Yeah.
So 3/5 of the team are the same guys that were there before, but he's got them to perform in the classroom not as a 2-5 but as a 3-0 or better. Okay. And so he's challenged them, motivated them, and inspired them to do things academically that they were either choosing not to do in the past or were not maximizing their abilities in the past.
Mm.
I see that transfer happening on the football field too, that he's going to get some of those young men to take their game to a whole nother level through how they practice, how they think, how they prepare. They're still the same kid. They're not any smarter.
Yeah.
You know, they just are maximizing their intelligence. And so I look for them to maximize their athletic ability. So one, I think that that's a big sign. Okay. 2, I mean, you just have to walk around and look at the new players that have come in. They don't look like the players we've brought in the past. I mean, we've got some guys now that you just look and go, wow, that cat looks like a Big 12 football player.
Yeah.
Okay.
I hear
and
you.
Then 3, when you talk to them, you know, and this, you know, this is not an absolute, Chris, and I hope no one, you know, jumps off the cliff because I say this, but, you know, historically, more often than not, if we ended up with a young man that really was probably came here as a Big 12 athletic talent, there probably was a flaw, and that's why they were here. They
either
absolutely. Had an academic flaw, a social flaw, a work ethic flaw. There was something that put them at Iowa State instead of more of a blue blood program. that's not the case anymore. We're getting guys now that were valedictorians, team captains, on championship teams that could easily show up at any other school that's a blue blood and be a compete to play.
That's cool.
And so that is cool because it's a different, you know, we've just kind of, we've stepped up our game, and that really goes back to Coach Campbell and his staff and how they recruit. I mean, they don't back down to anybody in recruiting.
Most impressive thing I've seen with Coach Campbell, in my opinion, I think Coach Manning gets a lot of credit, and as to the guys, but I remember watching that Northern Iowa game last year, and maybe I tend to be hyperbolic. I'm in talk radio. It happens. I understand. But I remember saying that was perhaps the worst offensive line performance I had seen since I started covering Iowa State in 2003. And what he did with the same group, he and Coach Manning, like where those guys were at the end of the year, they weren't all Big 12, but you're out there with a couple of walk-ons, a couple guys who didn't even play the position a couple years ago. And I just – the development, when you were talking about the academic portion of it, it was the same guys. But they went from being really, really bad to a very adequate offensive line in the Big 12. And I was just so impressed by that last year.
Well, you know, I think there's going to be more of that, those examples. You know, Coach Campbell would be the first to tell you, and you know, this sounds so maybe quirky or – but, you know, he truly means it when he said last year we spent such a big part of the beginning of the year just teaching the guys how to practice, not practicing. But that, you know, you got to keep your locker clean. You got to keep, you know, it was just like, how do I go about
keep your locker? I'd be in trouble if I played for Coach Campbell.
Well, but I mean, it's kind of like, how do you go about being a Division I football player?
It. Yeah,
they didn't know what they didn't know.
Yeah.
And so you were teaching them how to show up for practice. You know, so what you did at practice was like, you know, you were tired by the time you got to that part.
Yeah.
You know, and so this year when you talk to him, when he says, we're so far ahead, well, we're so far ahead because the guys are ready to learn, where last year they had to be taught how to learn.
Yeah, that's good stuff. That's good stuff. I'm excited. It's been a while since I've been this excited for a football season.
Yeah, you
just
know,
just the potential of it. I'm not putting too many expectations on 2017. I'm trying to tell fans that as well. But you can kind of see the building. The biggest thing for me, Jamie, is one of your, I'm not going to call him old, one of your most seasoned boosters. I was on the sideline during the spring game and just talking with him. And often those guys are a good way for me to just get a, they always give me the groundwork, right? Because they've seen it all. And he's just like, you know what, Chris, this just feels different. Kind of like what you said.
Yep.
He goes, I've been here since Johnny Majors, and this just feels different. I don't know what it means, but it kind of – you get that vibe around here.
Yeah, you know, and you know, we are long from anointed.
Nope.
We got to produce. You're right. But at the same time, I'm optimistic because would it surprise me if this group of young men produced? Not at all. Wouldn't surprise me at all. At the same time, you just, you know, you don't just show up and all of a sudden it just changes.
Yeah.
It's a process, and I know from the Cyclone Feud, I make fun of Coach Campbell.
I've got
Campbell's,
questions about Cyclone Feud coming
but,
up.
But I make fun of Coach Campbell tongue in cheek about the process.
Oh, yeah.
But it is a process, and there's still going to be adversity and there's still going to be disappointment along this ride.
How would you describe Matt Campbell, the CEO, compared to other coaches you've worked with?
Matt Campbell is old school football coach with contemporary packaging.
That's good.
You know, he's got,
yeah, I can see that.
He's
that,
got
that makes
old,
sense.
Old school fundamental values. You know, he is a football coach, but he's not, he's a contemporary football coach. I mean, cause I think, you know, at least in my age bracket, when you say you're a football coach, you know, what you get the picture of is kind of the Neanderthal football coach.
Barry Alvarez.
Well, I don't want to say that about Coach because Barry probably was contemporary in his era of football coaches. But you know what I mean. I'm not going to say any names of coaches, but you kind of get that.
Well, I know. Yeah. I think of Barry as a football guy. I think that's a good thing.
Well, I don't. Yes, but when I say Neanderthal football coach, sometimes you just, you know, I'm saying that in people perceive that more as a negative way of, you know, they're just a football coach. They're not very worldly.
Like
they're just
headbutting the guy with the helmet on. Okay.
Where Coach Campbell has those values of grounded football. You know, we're going to win on the line of scrimmage, you know, all the right things. But then it comes in a very contemporary package that he's able to relate to young men of this era. And he embraces, you know, the social media, the recruiting. He's just very contemporary, yet he's a football coach.
Yeah. No, I got you. I'm interviewing Kevin Dresser on Monday.
Uh-huh.
Doing one of these with him. I'm looking forward to that. Let me tell you something. I think this is interesting. That our wrestling forum on Psycho and Fanatic, since that all kind of went down, we've gotten more traffic on it than we had in, like, 4 or 5 years prior, I think.
Wow, that's awesome.
That's awesome. And again, you don't want – they've got to do something before you anoint them in your words. But there's some excitement there. There's definite excitement within the fan base, and I think they're excited for the season.
Yeah, they're you know, there's just – there's energy. And, you know, people want to be associated with winners, and winners give off an aura about them of, you know, I want to follow them. And Coach Dresser and Zadek and Coach St. John and Coach Metcalf, I mean, they're just a group of winners, and they're fun to be around. You know, Kevin Dresser is a marketing machine.
Yeah.
People are going to be excited to see the, you know, the mats rolled out in the grass fields come. Next Saturday, if you come and you're on the corner of South 16th here, as you come in by Ryman Gardens there, as you drive into campus, there will be a mat down, and our wrestlers will be out there.
Really?
Be out there wrestling next Saturday.
Has this been promoted yet?
Or
is this just going to happen?
I just work here, so I don't know if we've been promoting it or not.
I
know it's happening.
That's really cool. That and then the C.Y. Stevens thing. I can't wait.
Yeah.
I will be.
Yeah, well, the C.Y. Stevens, he'd be the first to tell you. It'll either be the greatest thing or the greatest bust.
I'm a theater guy.
But it's
going to
be fun trying.
Yeah, no, that's great. I mean, I read his newsletter.
Yep.
When he described like his vision for it.
Right.
It made a lot of sense. I saw Zadek the other day, and I don't know him very well, but I was here waiting to interview Coach Campbell, and I saw him just like, I think he was going out to his car, and he was sprinting.
Yeah.
He basically like galloped down the steps, and I'm like, oh, don't fall or anything. Is he just like that all the time?
Oh, yeah. And I'm not making this up. I think he's got like 45 speeding tickets in his career. and I'm not making that up. I mean, I may be off by one or two, but I'm not off by 10 or 20.
He's a hoot.
My description of this is wrestling coaches do not connect dots like the rest of us. And Coach Zadek doesn't even have dots.
That's fantastic.
But we love him.
That's fantastic. I'm looking forward to getting to know him, too. Basketball-wise, you kind of touched on this earlier. It's just a different feel going into the season.
Yeah, but
not necessarily a bad feel. It's just – it's like a lot of young guys. You don't have the proven stuff like you've had.
You know, I've described it this way in a couple talks I've given. One, it's going to be a little bit like Christmas, and you don't know what is under the tree wrapped up. And so it'll be fun. My anticipation for this year's basketball season, I'm a little more excited than I was last year because I kind of knew what to expect last year.
Absolutely.
And so I knew going into the season, it really was going to be just about, well, where are we at the end of the year? Because I knew we were going to be in the tournament. We were that good. Where this year, I don't really know what to expect. So I'm kind of really excited to go to those first couple games to get to learn these kids. But then I also remind people of this, you know, and this was my personal observation. You know, I remember, was it 4 years, 5 years ago, whatever it was, but, you know, DeAndre Kane was here, and he was obviously very good, and we were good when the ball was in his hand.
Yeah.
And every so often, Fred would take DeAndre out and put in this little skinny kid from Flint, Michigan, Monte Morris, to get him some playing time.
Yep.
And I remember thinking, you know, gosh, keep DeAndre out there, you know. Well, Monte Morris was a freshman, so was Naz, so was Matt Thomas, so was George Niang. They all got playing time, and that was the beginning of something pretty special for Iowa State. So, you know, Terrence Lewis, you know, Lindell, you know, we've got a whole host of young guys, Cameron Lard, even, you know, Solomon Young, although, you know, we all know him, but those guys are – we got to give them their chance like we gave that prior group of young men a chance. And it could be really exciting with these kids.
Absolutely. And it's so rare, too. I mean, even like use Kentucky as an example. They played in the NIT, you know, in between the national title run, like, you know, the Final Fours and stuff like that. To stay at the level that Iowa State's been at for so long and never take a little dip for a little bit of a rebuild is just kind of unrealistic.
I mean, well, I forget the stat, but it's only a handful of teams that have been to the NCAA tournament. I think we're 6 years in a row, 7 years in a row.
Aren't you like one of 13 or something like that?
So, yeah. You know, that shows you right there that the majority of schools take a dip.
Mm-hmm.
And very few schools take a dip where they still get to stay in the NCAA tournament. And so I'm not yet ready to rule out we're not going to do that. It's way too early to even have a sense of that.
Yeah.
But that's the goal.
What about Prohm? Kind of the same question about that I asked you about Campbell. Because I think Prohm's coaching probably just, and I'm talking game by game, has been a little bit underrated because of the talent that he had. But me from the outside looking in, I saw teams that, man, like, fans were ready to count them out. You stick a fork in them, and then, like, the Kansas game happens. And then, yeah, I feel like Prohm is a really good game-to-game coach in building his guys up.
Well, I think
– agree with that?
Yeah, you know, you started by kind of comparing Campbell and Prohm. And,
I don't know if I'm comparing is the right word, but I'm just – yeah, right. Like, what do you –
But, you know, there's such a difference between football and basketball because the football coach has to be such a CEO.
Yeah.
Where the basketball coach tends to be a little more hands-on. And part of that is just the staff they supervise.
That's true.
You know, and the sheer number of bodies. I mean, a big part of being football coach is just being able to keep everybody moving in the right direction. Where, you know, in basketball, you know, it's the head coach out on the court with the 12 or 13 guys, and, you know, it's the teacher in the, you know, the lecturer in
Absolutely.
The hall, and everybody's there. Where football, you know, there's very few times that Coach Campbell's teaching to all 125 guys at one time.
Correct.
You know, that's,
yeah.
So they're different jobs in a big time way. I think, you know, and so it takes different skill sets. You know, I think what makes Coach Prohm effective is his relationship with his guys, his demeanor, you know, that they kind of they're built in a way to play through their adversities. And so, you know, you what may not look like coaching actually is coaching.
Yeah.
Because you find your way through it by, you know, when I meet with recruits for Coach Prohm, you know, one of the things I always tell the kids, especially the offensive kids, is I don't think there's a shot you could take that Coach Prohm's going to yank you out of the game for, okay? Because that's just not his style.
Yeah.
He wants you ready to shoot because, you know what, if I've got confidence in you all the time, then I may have, you're going to have confidence in yourself for that game winner. You know, and
yeah, absolutely. I know exactly what you mean by that.
So
players coach type.
Yeah.
That's a cliche,
yeah. But yet at the same time, he's a very value-based man. And so those values are getting instilled in the program, but they're not being instilled by browbeating. They're being instilled by kind of fatherly.
Yeah, no, I could totally see that. There's been a couple times in the last couple of years where coach would suspend a guy.
Uh-huh.
And then a week later, that guy's playing the best ball we've ever seen him play in an Iowa State uniform. And that's always impressed me because whatever happens behind the scenes, and
right.
I don't pretend to know that, you could see a coach getting through to a young man and that young man learning from it and ultimately helping the team in the process. That's been impressive to me.
You know, and at the end of the day, that's really what all this is about. I know we get so caught up in the business part of it, and part of that is just because we have to. But at the end of the day, what they're really trying to do is take these, you know, taking young men and turning them into adult men that can thrive in whatever they choose to do post-college. And I think Steve Prohm does a really good job. I think DeAndre Burton is a great example of somebody that he really was able to reach and make a difference in Deontay's life that will have ramifications in a positive way for Deontay forever. And, you know, that's pretty cool stuff.
I don't want to leave the other sports out because I know there's a lot to be optimistic about. So where should we start? Let's get these Olympic sports. If you're going to tell,
How about I just do kind of a.
You want to do the whole thing?
Well, I'll just do a rapid fire.
I was going to say because we have a lot of young people who listen, so let's get them out to some of these fall sports.
So I just got done talking to the women's soccer team this morning. You know, they opened the season. They played two games last weekend. They're 1-1. They go to Iowa City tomorrow night for the kickoff of the Cy-Hawk series.
Okay,
so,
big one tomorrow then.
Big one, and you know. Reinforce to them how important it is for us to win that dang Cy-Hawk series. So, you know, so excited about women's soccer. They're coming off a year where they probably were the last team out of the NCAA tournament. You know,
oh, really?
So,
okay.
So this year we need to not leave it in the committee's hands, and they know that. And so I think we're going to have a really exciting year. And my guess is we'll get to the NCAA tournament in women's soccer. Volleyball opens up this weekend at home with their Cyclone tournament. You know, volleyball is, I think it's 13 straight years we've been to the NCAA tournament. You know, Christy Johnson and her staff have done an incredible job of building a really, really good, sustainable top-ranked volleyball program. They've got some young players coming in that they're going to need to play this year, but they still have a good returning core. And you know, we'll be in the hunt for, you know, first, second, third in the Big 12. And I fully expect that we'll go to the NCAA tournament for the 14th year.
And I want to do a little personal endorsement.
Yep.
There's nothing to me like really high-level volleyball. To watch that sport.
Yep.
At its highest level is just a phenomenal thing.
Well, and we're good, so it makes it really fun to go to it.
Yeah, it's so much fun to go to those.
Yeah. Men's and women's cross country. You know, our women's cross country team has won, I think 5 of the last 6 Big 12 championships. They're a little bit in a rebuilding year, but they've signed several really good recruits, including Andrew Logue's niece.
Oh,
who
cool.
Is
I didn't know that.
Carly Logue, who is one of the top runners in the United States. So we got a
– Where is she from?
She's from over in the Kansas City area.
Okay.
So she is a if she was a basketball or football recruit, she'd be a 5-star.
Nice.
So she will undoubtedly help us immediately. So a plug out there for Andrew.
Oh, that's cool.
So, and then our men's cross country team, you know, again, not ready to anoint them, but this is a big year. You know, they've picked up a couple of studs from junior college, and they should be really, really good. But they, you know, they were 2nd in the Big 12 last year and went to the end. They were 15th in the end, 16th at the NCAA. So the goal is to be maybe top 10 this year.
And then you just hired a softball coach, correct?
You know, they had to start with Jamie, I guess, because the AD's Jamie and the previous coach's name was Jamie, and so we hired a Jamie. But no, we brought back Jamie Pinkerton.
Yep.
You know, he's been the head coach at Tulsa, Arkansas, and Montana, has led all 3 of those programs to the College World Series. So we're looking forward to him being back and, you know, helping our softball team. I think we, you know, if we – that's the fall kickoff.
Last but not least, there seems to be some – controversy swirling around your victory at the Cyclone feud.
Well, there shouldn't be any controversy now because we won flat out live. I mean, those that
there's some people insinuating that you may know the questions heading into it.
Well, you know, what's really sad about that?
I'm just joking.
No. But what's really sad about that is then they're really calling in the integrity of John Walters. And I'm disappointed for John that somebody would think that John Walters gave up the questions. But I can assure you that that did not happen. You know, I know there was some controversy during the season about Minneapolis, and you know, I just love that city.
That's good stuff. That is a cool thing, though, to watch. It's fun for fans, I can attest, because I can, like, see them talking about it on the message board. They watch all of you guys talking trash together on Twitter.
You know, the concept behind it was, one, to kill some time when we were traveling around the state on the buses.
But, yeah, yeah.
But what it quickly became is a way for the personalities of our coaches to come out. And, you know, I think a Coach Prohm in his first year, I think most people after that first basketball season thought he was kind of wound tight, like they didn't really know him. You know, and then we go do the tailgate tour, and his personality just came flowing out, and he's really opened up since then.
He has.
Yeah.
Who's the best trivia buff on the coaching roster?
Best coaching, you know, I would say the unsung hero that really knows stuff is Tony Miata, our softball coach. Although, truth be told, Coach Prohm is pretty good at this.
Is he?
Yeah. But, you know,
you don't want to admit that publicly. Are you sure you don't
want
to?
No, I don't mind admitting it. Okay. You know, I mean, because you know, he's pretty good at it, but we still beat him.
Yeah.
You know, so it's
– So is he like the captain of the other team or
– Yes.
So it's basically you're leading one squad, Prohm's leading the other?
Yes.
Is that how it would go?
Yes. You know, and so
– Where does Campbell fit in? He doesn't seem like a big trivia guy to me.
No, but, you know, he did really well during the year because there was a lot of questions that he was able to tap into things his kids.
Oh.
Like, he knew the Marvel comics.
Yep.
He knew, you know, he just knew some things. The pirates, you know, he knew pirates. And
oh,
part
okay.
of it is because of, you know, his kids.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Thank you for your time. I know you got to run to an event. We appreciate this. And I know that it'll be well listened to. And everybody will be out here in a week from Saturday.
It'll be I haven't seen the weather forecast
don't
yet.
Don't even worry about it. It's going to be beautiful.
Well, it's we should have a sellout. So we're hoping we have sellouts for those first two games, and it'll be a really cool environment. Night games in Jack Trice Stadium are always special.
Yeah, they're really. It's just beautiful. All the colors,
yep.
Especially when
get all day to tailgate.
Yeah, it'll be perfect. Thanks, Jamie. We appreciate it.
All right, thank you.